Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Welcome to episode 25 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life. Well, today we're going to be talking about what? How to change habits? Not again. You know we can't change them. Yes, we can, because we have the ultimate expert on this, Mary Jane Ryan, a friend, a colleague, and a renowned writer and thought leader in this field. Oh boy, can't wait. But before we begin the episode, just know that this episode of Her is made possible by our friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized just for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode, rate this podcast, and review us. Oh boy, I read all of these. You know I do. And I love to hear from you. So please leave us your thoughts. All right, it's time for Her.
Her. The podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about her.
Now, on this episode, we're going to be talking about, habit changers. Well, that just happens to be the title of a brand new book called Habit Changers, 81 Game-Changing Mantras to Mindfully Realize Your Goals. And this is by Mary Jane Ryan, MJ Ryan, for all of you out there. And oh my gosh, MJ has served as an executive coach to executives, entrepreneurs, and leadership teams around the world for the past 15 years. Her clients include Microsoft, Royal Dutch Shell, and Time. Previously, she was the founder and CEO of Canary Press, a book publishing company. She's one of the creators of the Random Acts of Kindness series and the author of 8 books, including This Year I Will. Oh boy, that's a January book. And How to Survive Change You Didn't Ask For. And her latest, Habit Changers. MJ, welcome to the Her Podcast.
I'm really happy to be talking to you, Pam.
Oh boy, oh boy. All right, so I've got all kinds of interesting questions. First of all, I love the book. Just love it. As I've loved all of your work, because it's just taking complex science and wild and crazy theories and making them real and applicable. So let's just start by defining what a habit changer is.
Yes. So it's a simple slogan or a saying that is the reminder of the new thing that you want to be doing. So it's literally something that you say to yourself to trigger the behavior that you want. And so they're different from affirmations. So an affirmation is something like, I am calm, I am confident. And the challenge with that is, you know, when we women say those things to ourselves, what happens? There's a little voice that goes, no, you're not. But this is instead reminder of how to be confident. So one of the ones I love comes from a fan of mine from another country. She sent me an email saying, I want to work on being more self-confident. Can you help me? I want to be a tiger, not a kitten. And so I
love it.
I emailed back and I said, you've got it. Just say to yourself, be a tiger, not a kitten, and you'll be doing it. And so she did. That's a habit changer.
That's an example. I see. Why'd you write the book?
I wrote the book because I'm really committed and fascinated about helping people change. And so I'm always looking for things to make it easier, to make it stick, to make it really work for ourselves, because it actually is not easy, as we know. And I thought I had done what I had to say about the topic when I wrote This Year I Will. And then I was with a guy who was sent to me because he was told that he was the worst boss that people ever had. And his manager made him talk to me. And he was one of those people who would give you something to do, then he wouldn't like the way you were doing it, and he'd take it away and do it himself and yell at you at the same time. So I was talking to him about delegation and how you delegate. So I was yammering on, and he looked at me and he goes, wait. I need it much simpler. I got to remember what to do. You got to make it easier. So I said, okay, say what, they're supposed to do and why it's important, not how to do it. So he said, okay, say what and why not how. I can do that. And he wrote down on a tiny little piece of paper, say what and why not how. And he said it to himself over and over, and he totally changed. And I thought, wow, bingo, I should be doing this for everyone who works for me, because we need these reminders, because we're already wired to do what we're already doing, and we do it automatically. And so the only way we're going to change it is if we've got something like this to remind us in the very moment of what we're trying to do instead.
I love it. Well, tell us about, you know, how this was inspired by the Buddhist tradition of Lojong, or slogan practice.
Yeah.
What is that all about?
The very time that this guy, just before I had this meeting with this guy, who when I came up with this one for him, I had been reading about this Tibetan practice called Lojong, which is you work with these sayings, and you work and work with them, and you say them over and over yourself until you've incorporated that. And so I thought, that's really cool. And I looked it up, and the sayings are so obscure. I mean, they're like koans, right? And so they're not for anyone who's not a Buddhist, really, practitioner. But so I couldn't use those specific things with people. But I started I put the two things together. I was like, huh, I said that with that guy, and it seems to be working. And then here's this thing. So what if I adapt it to the kinds of changes that we most of us want to make in our lives? And so that's when I started doing it, and then I put the book together in terms of categories, right? So these what is organized by are the typical things that people come to me to get support on, whether it's everything from anger to procrastination and worry, right?
I love it. I love it. And some of these titles on this are absolutely fabulous. You can't say yes if you can't say no. What does that mean?
Well, that's a good one for a lot of women, right? These are for all of us who are people pleasers and appeasers, and we say yes automatically, right? And that's part of what happens in the fight, flight, or freeze response. In humans, the freeze is freeze and appease. I'll just say yes, 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 so you'll go away, right? And we don't even necessarily remember what we said yes to. And so this is a reminder that you really have to be able to say no, or otherwise your yes is meaningless, because you're not really agreeing. You can only agree to do something if you have a choice to also say no about it. And so you can't say yes if you can't say no. Reminds all these people pleasers, wait, do I really mean yes here, or would I really prefer to say no?
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. One of my favorite ones, I mean, I could just go through this, every single one of these, and we could spend hours, so I'm not going to do that because you don't have the time and neither do I. So I have some favorites here.
Good. I'd love to hear.
You mentioned anger is fear on the boil.
Yeah. So this is actually one that was inspired by me and a change that I was making in myself, which is that I have that terrible habit, used to have the terrible habit, of blowing up at my only one person on the face of the planet, and that's my significant other. And I knew that it was not them, because when my significant other changed, I still have this issue, right? And so I'd been working with trying to figure out how to deal with my anger for many years. This was a while ago, like 25 years ago or so. And I got involved with the guy who's now my husband. And very soon, when we had the first whatever blow up, he looked at me and said, "What are you afraid of?" And it totally stopped me in my tracks. And I realized, and this set me on the whole course of what I've done in terms of helping people understand the stress response and fight or flight, because anger is the fight of fight or flight. And underneath anger, what he knew intuitively is our sense of threat has been triggered. That's fear. So under anger is always some kind of sense of fear. And when we understand it as fear, we don't take our anger so seriously. Like, wait a minute, it helps people understand, what am I afraid of here? And typically when we're in the anger response, we're just trying to, quote unquote, in quotes, kill the threat. We're not in touch with the fact that underneath that we're actually afraid.
Uh-huh. And so what do you mean by handshake your fear?
So this is a Buddhist concept, too. So I think Buddhism is very wise, I think, about how people relate should or can relate to emotions. So typically when we are afraid or when we're angry, what have we in the West been taught to do? Express it, like blow up, or suppress it, like push it down and pretend it's not happening, right? Those are sort of the two things. At least that was what I learned to do. You either sat on it really tight and it was like a spring on a couch and eventually it was going to explode, or you just explode it. And so what the Buddhists say is, no, we're supposed to turn towards that feeling and befriend it. So this is where the handshake idea comes from. It's just a reminder to be kind to yourself. Something's going on. What's going on? Why is this happening? What are you feeling? And being comforting to yourself the way you would comfort a friend or a child. So that's what it's for, is to remind us to turn towards our feeling instead of away from it or against it.
I love it. And just, you know, basically confronting it and just seeing it for what it is. When you do that, you take its power away.
Exactly,
right?
Because you're engaging the higher thinking in your brain. You're developing or you're using what people call mind sight, which is the ability of your mind to see what your mind's doing. And so from that place, and this is, we have awareness and therefore we have more choice. We take the power away, as you say, because we are aware of what's happening, so we can decide to either engage with it or not.
I gotcha. I love it. Now, here's another one that all of our wonderful listeners in her podcast land, you know, love. Procrastination. So all you need is the first action, and work is the best way to get working. What did you mean by that?
Well, those are the ones that, you know, part of what happens when we get stuck in procrastination is the longer we procrastinate, the worse we feel, right? And so the work is the best way to get working is just a trigger to remember you're going to feel better. You're going to feel so much better if you just do this thing, right? And so that's for the people who that's what they need as a reminder. The one about all you need is the first action or the first step or the next step is for people who get what's underneath their procrastination is a sense of overwhelm. Like it's all there's so much. It feels so big and so overwhelming that, again, they're in fight or freeze. And so it just feels like too much. And that statement actually comes from a guy named David Allen, who's the organizational guru who wrote a book called Getting Things Done. And he's the one who said, you don't need to have it all figured out, which I thought it was such a profound learning for me, and I teach everybody that I work with. You don't have to have it all figured out. All you have to do is what's the first thing? And just do that tiny little thing. And the good thing for those who procrastinate is once you do that tiny thing, you're in action, and then it's easier to stay in action. Then you ask yourself, what's the next thing? And then what's the next thing? And you one action yourself all the way to the end.
So work is the best way to get working. So once you get that action going, you're working.
You're working, and so then you're not in procrastination anymore. So you feel so great that you're not, that you can keep on going.
But you know what's interesting? You know, once you develop a habit, and for all intent and purposes, it becomes somewhat subconscious.
Yeah.
You know, at one point in our life, you know, we learned how to brush our teeth. And if I asked you to recall brushing your teeth today, you're probably like, you know, because it's become such a subconscious, right?
Correct.
The question is, how do you keep it going,
right,
despite all?
Yeah.
You know, when the arrows are coming in from life and,
yep,
you know, all heck's breaking, what is the secret to maintaining the routine of habits?
Right. So part of it is, at the beginning, recognizing that when you're going to try to do a good habit, it has to be conscious for a while. You have to practice a bunch before it goes into this automatic. The way I've been talking about it is like driving a car. How long did it actually take you to learn to drive a car? Quite a while. Because there's all these different parts to it. Now you put in the brake. Oh, I got to look in the back rearview mirror. It's like, and now everyone who knows has been driving more than a year doesn't have to think about any of those things, right? But when it's at the beginning part, when it's this conscious use is what it is that has to be practiced enough before you make the switch over to automatic. You need, so that's why these habit changes are good. They remind you so that you can mindfully do what you want until it becomes habitual. But there's a couple other attitudes and practices we can do. So first of all, focus. Pick one thing that you want to work on, not 27. This is work. So if you have too many things going on, you're not going to remember any of them. So pick one thing. Excuse me, I'm going to go. So pick one thing and then make it actionable. What actually specifically are you going to do? Say, oh, I'm going to work on work-life balance. Well, what specifically are you going to do? Put your feet up for 15 minutes a day and read a book? What is it? So you got to know what the action is that you're actually going to take. You're going to get a habit changer. Either you're going to get one from the book or you're going to make one up for yourself. And then, so that's going to help you remember the exact action that you're doing. And then you're going to pay attention to when you're doing it right. Because you aren't going to turn your goof-ups into give-ups, because you will forget. Every single one of us will blow it. It's like when my kid was learning to drive. She bumped into the next door neighbor's car. She hit the curb when she was parking, right? I mean, because she didn't know how to do it right. So we are going to mess up. Now she's been driving for 3 or 4 years, and she's a pro, right? So it's the same thing. We've got to have that same kind of attitude towards ourselves, which is that we are going to forget, we are going to blow it, and the only difference between people who really change and those who don't is that they persist. They say, okay, today is another day. I'm going to try again today, and I'm going to get better as a result. I mean, we celebrate successes when they happen. So, you know, this you know because you're a long-distance runner. Everyone who's talk to me, you focus on how far you've come, right? Not how far you have to go.
Exactly. Well, you know, there's one other thing, MJ. You know, in reading the book, one of the things that I run into as a, you know, physician is that so many people out there, when you're looking at habits of lifestyle, all right, so we're not talking about a habit like driving the car because it's so physical and it gives you immediate feedback. I mean, you either, you know, planted yourself into your neighbor's car or you didn't. But, you know, when it comes to remembering to exercise, to meditate, to eat appropriately, now things get a little bit trickier, maybe a lot trickier, because now how do you, you know, when life hits, as it always does on a daily basis, how do you stay the course with a habit when it's something like that? It's more amorphous. It's like wrapping your arms around fog because you don't get immediate feedback, you know?
Yep. So part of it is that there's a bunch of tricks, right? So one is you make a routine, you're scheduling it in. So at 4 o'clock, you go and do the thing so you just do it without thinking about it, right? So that's one way. And you have a reminder because the phone buzzes and you go and work out, right? And the more that you make it choiceless, then these things are like, I only eat these. I remember sitting at a meeting recently with a bunch of women around a executive table, and there was candy on the table, right? And everyone was eating candy and complaining that they shouldn't be eating candy. And I just said, I just don't eat candy. It's like, I have a rule. I don't eat it. So if I have that rule, it doesn't even cross my mind when it's sitting there that I'm going to do it. So some of those things we can put in place, like, well, this is what I do or this is what I don't do. I think you call them, you know, avoid the bingeable, your binge thing, right?
And that's right.
So that's another way. And the other thing, and this is something actually that I learned from you, which is that you have to have a super powerful emotional why you want to do this thing. And you have to keep that front and center, right? So so it isn't just like, oh, yeah, I want to be healthy. You know, the part of our brain that wants to approach reward, which we share with all mammals, it's as smart as a bunny rabbit or a squirrel. It doesn't care about those big long-term things. It wants the short-term reward right now. So that's why we keep defaulting away from the thing we say we want. But if you really make it, you have a deep emotional why. Why do I really want to do it? I want to live to see my grandkids or something like that. Then you can keep that front and center with literally a picture or a symbol or something like that.
Yeah, you know, I love that. And that is classically what I've called in my books, the power why.
That's
people
right.
don't... You know, you deal with this lifestyle thing all the time as well in all of your coaching, because it's something that helps support people's higher levels of executive function, no matter what their job is or back and forth. And, you know, I think a lot of people robot, you know, it all the way through. They say, okay, well, I'll do this diet and I'll do this exercise. And they're not making any connection with a purpose.
Exactly.
With a meaning.
That's right.
And if they don't do that, then, you know, they're going to last about a week if they last that long.
I was going to say about a week. I had the same exact time frame. Yeah, and this why is because what you're saying to the bunny rabbit, I want you more than I want this immediate thing of like lying around doing nothing or eating the wrong thing or whatever, which the bunny wants right then. So you've got to go, you've got to have the thing, and it has to be front and center. So I worked with a guy once who was trying to stop smoking, and I said, why do you want to do it? He gave me all the health reasons. But I said, forget that. The bunny doesn't care. And he said, my dad died of a heart attack when he was 55, and I want to live longer, long enough to retire to a beach in Hawaii. I said, that's it. Okay, now I want you to go online and find a picture that gives you that feeling of that when you look at it, you know, you're thinking, yes, right? And download it as a bunch of copies, put it in your car, your house, your office, and every time you feel like a cigarette, look at that picture and think, I want you more. That was his mantra, I want you more. And he did it.
I love it. I just absolutely love it. You know, one of my most favorite stories that I tell is of a woman who, you know, made it up to 290. She was, you know, she had a lot of anxiety. She almost lost a child, et cetera, et cetera. And she's just a woman who, you know, the gig. She gives to everyone else, and she's nowhere to be found on her own radar screen, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, doctors have been thrashing at her and, you know, just threatening her with syringes and diabetes and all the rest of it. And she just let it go in one ear and out the other and kept, you know, overly caregiving and on until one day she did a lot of volunteer work in the Civil Air Patrol. And so you have to wear these really funky uniforms. And she was told she was going to be given the highest award for a civilian, you know, doing this whole work and da-da-da. And that this award was going to be given a year from that moment. See, they tell you well in advance so you can make sure to, you know, cancel all your other, you know, appointments and whatever. And she was so honored, and she couldn't even stand it. She was so happy, et cetera, et cetera. And then she says, well, what do I wear for this? And they said, well, and she had a choice. It was either going to be this horrific looking muumuu, you know, kind of, you know, it's just awful looking uniform dress kind of thing, because of her size, or it was going to be sort of a sleeker, you know, uniform with either a very nice, skirt and jacket top, or even, with slacks, but, you know, they just didn't make them in larger sizes. She was going to be kind of relegated to this nasty looking thing. So it was the weirdest thing. That was the tipping point.
Absolutely.
It's something it's what I call the epiphany.
Often women say, well, I shouldn't have such a shallow reason. Well, actually, that part of your brain that's actually controlling your behavior, it wants those kinds of goodies. They want to look great for the wedding, or they want to fit into that little black dress to make everybody else jealous. That's fine. Those are actually the motivators that actually work.
Well, yeah, and it turns out, you know, I'd say any motivator is a good motivator. I mean, you know, so long as it isn't draconian or strange or something. But, in her case, that was it. She turned around and never looked back.
Yep.
165 pounds is where she found herself, which is wonderful for her 5'6" inch frame, because she's very, very muscular. She went on to do some triathlons with me and turned out to be an absolute powerhouse of an athlete. Never looked back. Her doctor scratching their head. I said, I wish I could take full credit for this, you know, miracle that just took place. But the joke was, she said, this is what it was. And then she has this picture of herself wearing the sleek skirt, the beautiful jacket, and looking fabulous on stage. That's what it's all about.
That's
what you talk about in your fabulous book, The Habit Changers. You know, one of the things that you stress in this wonderful book is that people need to make that connection. They have to see it in front of them. Just like you said, you know, to have that guy find that beautiful picture of Hawaii and the
beach, right,
and the, you know, and just make that connection. You know, I want to flip around for just a second now. What I want to talk about are a couple more things that I just, that I just loved from this book, just loved. And they really have a lot to do with, you know, women. So communication is a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the way you talked about talking and listening should be practiced in equal measure. Hello. Okay, talk to me.
Well, this was funny because this was actually for a woman client of mine who was an executive. And she thought she had a rude awakening when I did a 360 and talked to her stakeholders. And they said, she just doesn't shut up and she never listens. Because she would go into meetings and she would, you know, talk on, and then she'd say, great meeting, and leave, right? It was like, well, wait a minute, there's other people in the room. They have opinions and they have thoughts and they want to hear, they want to express them as well. So this is one for people, well, actually on both sides, you know, are you speaking up enough? Or are you speaking up too much? You know, it really should be, there should be some back and forth, right? And it's just, it's an awareness practice for that.
Yeah, and it's just learning how to be a really, really good listener. I think a lot of people spend so much time, you know, like playing Ann Cuddy, you know, TED Talks and trying to get that power posture going and, you know, and talking in a particular way. What they forgot was the listening part, and I loved the fact that you really nailed it with the fact that you need both of those. Another thing that's interesting is perfectionism.
Oh yeah.
You know, the P's with women. It's procrastination, perfectionism, etc. You know, relax. You've already failed at being perfect. I loved that. I'm
for perfectionists, because what you don't want to do is ever is fail. You want to be perfect. And so that's the underlying thing, of course, under perfectionism. So guess what? You've already blown it. So forgive it. So forget. Just give it up. You haven't done it right already. So just don't even try.
I love it. I love it. Like, don't even go there. What did you mean? Feed forward, not back.
Oh yes. So this one is for people. This is to remind people, whether it's they're a manager or they have giving feedback. What we call feedback to peers is whenever we give feedback, it really is true. It's about past performance. Well, you know, and I often have clients who, you know, say they bring people in and they go, you know, well, 6 months ago you did this. There's nothing somebody could do about that. It's in the past.
Yeah.
And you feel
kind
of hopeless when you receive that. In fact, receiving feedback like that actually decreases performance, is what they found. But when you feed forward, it's like saying, moving forward, I would love it try to do this, or if you would work on that. Then that tells my brain, oh, okay, starting in this moment, here's the suggestion of what I can do in the future, starting this moment, that will make a big difference. Because you can't change the past at all, ever, right? And all you can feel is regret and shame about the past. But you can certainly, absolutely learn something new and try it out moving forward. So that's
what people. I love it. I just love it. And I once again, practical tips, tools, and techniques that I think everyone out there in her podcast land can use. And then finally, worry. What did you mean outsource your worry?
Yeah.
I just loved it. Outsource your worry. I mean, all right, so go for it.
So this was a client of mine, a woman who was like, she said, I just realized I can outsource my worry. I said, tell me what you mean. She said, well, I'm really good at big picture thinking. I'm great in front of clients, but I'm always worried about being places on time and all my my travel details and stuff. She said, but my assistant is really good at that. So I should just give it to her and I don't have to worry, because she'll be doing the worrying for me. And so what she's pointing out is that we all have strengths and we all have limitations. And the more we embrace our strengths and our limitations, then the more we can say, where do I need support? And how can I get the help I need in places where I'm worried? Because we worry in the place where we don't have talents.
And man, I want to outsource all of mine, to say the least. And then, you know, You know, as you're looking at all these, you've got so many beautiful points: success, stress, self-confidence, self-care, relationships, on and on. I love this. You know, as we're bringing this to a close, because Lord knows I can go on forever with this, because you articulate this so beautifully. What could you tell women out there in her podcast land as a final piece of wisdom as they're looking at this whole issue of changing habits?
Yeah, well, so it's interesting. So I'd like to offer actually one that I think that is super important for women as we're such incredible givers. And that is this, now come back to me. So when we come, when what we tend to do is, you know, we give and give and give to the other person. And when we're doing that, we're only thinking about them, right? What do they need? How can I help them? It's all about them. And so this notion of, so you put your hand on your heart after you've done that, and you think to yourself, now come back to me, right? And it's a way of making sure that you are including yourself in your own caring. And I think that's one of the really important things that most of us women really, really need to work on. Because if we're not back inside of ourselves, we can't change anything because we're not home. We're over there worrying about them.
Oh, wow. I'm just saying that this is such a fabulous thought. I'm just going to memorize that. Now come back to me. That's just eloquent. Ah, love it, love it, love it. All right, everyone out there, we've been talking about habit changers and specifically 81 game-changing mantras to mindfully realize your goals by Mary Jane Ryan, MJ Ryan. Again, the title of the book is Habit Changers. The website is habit-changers.com. MJ, thank you so much for being on the Her podcast and sharing such wonderful wisdom and a whole lot of good thoughts toward women out there who are struggling with this whole issue of habit changing. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Yay. All right, everyone. Remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take 30 seconds and rate this podcast on iTunes. Why? Well, because we want to attract more people just like you to the show. And that happens when you take the time to rate it. While you're at it, please leave a review as well. Remember, I read these things. I know what you're thinking. I want to hear more. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD. And you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and please stay well.